Well, hello and welcome to the J. Sterling Hughes Show, where we share the secrets and the strategies of how we are building a rapidly growing family law practice. You know, my purpose here is to document what's working and what's not working in our practice with hopes that you can take that and you can recontextualize that for your practice and shorten your success curve. And today I'm sharing with you 11 very hard fought lessons that we have learned, that I have learned in particular in growing our family law practice. This was certainly not in my business plan. Much of this, I didn't anticipate the coming storm on some of my mistakes. So I'm sharing these with you here. Hopefully you can apply these into your practice, into your leadership, and your firm will grow even faster as a result of our mistakes and mistakes that I made in leading our team. Number one, being a leader must become your identity. And I'm talking to the founding attorneys or a founding attorney in this case. So most of us have a story where we start as a sole practitioner and we begin to grow our firm and then we add and grow attorneys and others from there. Well, what got us started, being an excellent lawyer and serving our clients, has to change. That identity of seeing ourselves in that way needs to change for us to grow and scale the firm. We can't identify primarily as a lawyer anymore. Now we need to identify within our mind. Our mindset shift has to move from being a lawyer to now being a leader and empowering others to pursue their craft and to deliver service to our clients. The most successful law firm builders make this transition. They no longer are technicians or craftsmen doing their job as a lawyer. They now become leaders building a firm and building a business. To scale your firm, to grow your firm, seeing yourself as a leader has to become senior to seeing yourself as a lawyer. Leadership over lawyering to grow the firm. I see a lot of lawyers get tripped up here is when they have to make a decision between control and growth. You can't have both. You have to give up control to get growth. And that requires self-leadership and self-identifying as a leader to make that happen. Number two, building a law firm is a sprint and a marathon. These two concerns, sprinting and marathoning, have to coexist together. That tension will always be there. What I mean by that is having a sense of urgency while at the same time keeping a view over the horizon and seeing the long game. So what this looks like is with a sense of urgency, we've got to return that phone call to that client who needs us to respond. That means whenever something comes up and we have to terminate an employee, let's do it right away and not wait on that. Having a sense of urgency, that means hitting our daily task list on those three most important things we need to get done that day, having a sense of urgency around those things. These are in the micro, having a sense of urgency around things in a micro. Conversely, turning that around in the macro, in the big picture, having a long-term view, playing the consistent long game within our firm means positioning in the marketplace. We want to position our firm in a certain way in the marketplace. Well, that's not done overnight. That takes years to build that brand, to build within the minds of our potential clients, building that positioning within their mind. When they think of a certain problem, they think of our firm to solve that problem for them. That's playing the long game on that. That also looks like developing people. And that's one of the most difficult things that leaders have to do to grow their firm is developing those around them, empowering them to do their job. Well, that takes time. That takes patience. That takes mistakes happening, going back and helping that person see where they made a mistake and then correcting it for the next time around. That is playing the very, very long game. That could look like giving up short-term compensation for a long-term, much more compensation, a long-term gain. All of those things require investing in a long game, investing in the future. So at the same time, leaders have to maintain that tension between a sense of urgency for the now, for the micro, along with playing the very, very long game. Number three, vulnerability in the leader is actually confidence in action. And here's what I mean by that. If as the leader in your firm, you have difficulty saying, I don't know, on something that maybe you feel like you should know, especially if it has to do with the law or has to do with leading the business, having the vulnerability to say, you know what? I don't know, but also the discipline, obviously, to follow up, get the answer and get back to your teammate. That's vulnerability. Saying, I was wrong. I thought it would be this. I completely missed on it. I'm sorry. I'm wrong. That's vulnerability. This might be one of the most difficult areas for most leaders to grow through is this vulnerability and admitting the wrong. Because a lot of times we think, especially in young leaders, we think we have to know all the answers. Our teammates around us expect us to do that. You know what? I have never met a teammate who expected me as their leader, their business leader, to know all the answers. In fact, it gives them confidence when I say, I don't know. Obviously, you need to have some level of competence in your job and lead them to know all the answers a lot of the times, but saying no, I don't know, but I can find out, generally only inspires confidence. And this could be really hard for some folks if their insecurity is so strong, and it takes a while to kind of work through that in order to be able to get to that point in your growth and your maturation to be able to say that and do that. But it's essential. We have to be able to get to that point where we can be vulnerable, or else it creates a lid on our leadership, and we can only build our firm up to that point of that lid. We can't build the team and the firm beyond that. That is our lid. So raising our lid requires vulnerability and growth, so we can raise our lid so the firm can benefit and our teammates can benefit from around us. This becomes difficult for a lot of us. And I know I've struggled in this area in particular, is we judge ourselves. Most of us judge ourselves and view ourselves by our intentions, right? What we intended to do, what we set out to do, what our thought process was. However, our teammates, they're looking at us, watching us, and their judgment or their view or their opinions that they're forming around our leadership comes from more often by what we do, what they see, what they're filtering through their own mind and watching us do our thing. So those are two very different things. And vulnerability is one of the ways that we can kind of bridge those two opposing points of view within our practice, within our teams. Number four, discipline today avoids a whole lot of pain tomorrow. So practically speaking, when we started our firm, we got about a year into it and we really sensed that we were onto something and that we could grow and scale the firm. But what we didn't have yet, we didn't have a client practice management system in place. We just didn't. We started without that. We just got going. And we looked at all the options out there, and the most difficult to employ, and we felt like would be the most expensive over the long haul, but would give us that long-term capacity to scale our practice almost infinitely, was using a system called Salesforce. And Salesforce is extraordinarily powerful, but it requires a lot of customization. It is certainly not an off-the-shelf product. It is something that requires tinkering, and it never ends because Salesforce updates their system and we've got to go, you know, figure out what the updates were and make sure that's working and didn't break our particular customization that we employed in that. So over the years, we have just customized our sales force incessantly, but that upfront discipline has enabled us to get to the point now where we have access to so much data within our firm to manage our practices around that it's really given us a competitive advantage in the marketplace. So that discipline on the front end certainly avoided pain for us on the back end. Also, when we converted from hourly to fixed fee, I can't tell you enough how extraordinarily painful that was for us. It was very, very difficult to do that. And we knew going in that we were going to get kicked in the mouth a lot in order to figure out how to do that. We felt like long-term, if we can make that conversion to fixed fee from hourly, it aligned our interest as attorneys with those of our clients. And we felt like that alignment would just breed a lot of power and enable us to serve them in better ways and would make the relationship much more fruitful mutually between us and our client and so forth. So we felt like long-term, that's where we wanted to be. But on the front end, I'm telling you, my goodness, that was a lot of hard work and discipline and pain on the front end to avoid that along. And now today we're at a point where we're 100% fixed fee and we have really good margins on what we're doing. Our clients are extremely happy with our services, and it's all come together after years of pain and discipline on the front end to have that reward on the back end. Lesson number five that we have learned, that I have learned in growing our family law practice: leadership isn't winning our way, it's clearing the way. My number one job as the CEO of Sterling Law is to remove obstacles for my teammates, helping them clear things out of the way that I am sometimes uniquely positioned to do so they can do their job better. What it doesn't look like, and where I have absolutely fallen flat on my face, is winning my way. I can tell you decisions that I have made over the past 10 years where I pushed my way turned out to be abject failures and hurt our team. More often than not, the best decisions, the best ideas almost exclusively have come from our teammates. And those decisions or those ideas would not have bubbled up if we hadn't focused in many of those instances in removing obstacles and empowering our team to do that. This sounds abstract and it sounds good on paper, but it's something that is absolutely essential to growing our practice as leaders, is being of the mindset of, if I can clear the way for my team and I can put good people around me and I can bring teammates into our firm that are just eager to live out our mission, great things will happen. That does work. It absolutely does work. So helping clear the way yields way more results than winning our way. Lesson number 6, hire to compliment, not to get compliments. So we know this instinctively. This is like business 101. It's in all of the books, is, you know, hiring teammates to compliment you, not to get compliments. But man, I love compliments like anyone else. And I love my ego being stroked just about like anyone else. But it is a huge ego tax to pay to have people around you and to hire people around you that are there to compliment you, compliment your skills, offset where you're weak at and that sort of thing. So this really starts with you, the leader, knowing what you're weak at, knowing that there are many areas of the practice that you are not the best one to be doing that. In fact, there's probably just a very few small number of things that you're best equipped to do and serve within your particular practice. So it starts with you knowing your weaknesses and finding and bringing those around you who are good at complementing you in your areas of weakness. And that demands security on your part, because you're going to bring people along you who are going to be way better than you and that are going to have way more influence with teammates around them because of what they're strong and what they're good in. But if you're going to scale and grow your practice, we have to work through this and we have to grow through it. We can't be constrained by our insecurities around this area of hiding our weaknesses and not letting teammates know this and hiring those who can compliment them for us. One more point on this around the idea of compliments. The bigger your firm grows, the larger your organization becomes, the temptation for those around you to shift away from complimentary services and helping build the firm to more of a complimenting you stroking ego, that becomes more and more of a temptation for folks. That's just human nature. They're not weak people. That's just how it works. As organizations grow, that pressure becomes greater to climb and to do things within the firm that will help get you there rather than keeping the agenda of the entire firm and helping the leader by expressing truth and giving good, honest, direct, candid feedback. Know that as your organization grows, that temptation becomes stronger. It becomes more and more difficult to get truth and good, solid, honest feedback from your team, the bigger it grows. It's just the way things work. So those teammates who are willing to do that and who are willing to compliment you from an E standpoint, compliment you and you're what you're weak at, becomes so much more valuable to the firm as it grows, and especially those who will just be real direct with you and tell you truth that maybe it's sometimes difficult for us to hear. Number 7, indecision turns temporary pain into chronic pain. You know, one of the strengths of my leadership, one of the strengths of my partner's leadership as we've started the firm was decisions. We have not tarried too long on making a decision. We have been very quick about that. And what we call decision velocity within our practice certainly has given us advantages. Now, having a strength like that is fantastic, except when you're super wrong, which we have been. So we have had to manage that tension between making quick decisions and making really poor decisions that have caused damage and have set us back time and have caused projects never to succeed. We have felt like the trade-off between the power that comes from making decisions quickly and moving forward with 60 to 70% of the information rather than 90 or 90+% of the information has enabled us to grow faster. We haven't gotten stuck on things that we just analyzed too long. And we haven't been intentional about this. We have known that we're gonna make some poor decisions and we're gonna have to pick up the pieces. That's gonna cost us money and resources and time to do that. But in the big picture, over the long haul, that decision velocity moving quick has certainly served us very well and has helped avoid some of these really painful, long-term, protracted, chronic situations in building out a firm. Of course, we haven't been perfect around it. We certainly have made the wrong calls, absolutely. But over the big picture, staying disciplined around decision velocity has served us extremely well as we've grown our practice. Number 8, 10 minutes with your best performers is worth so much more than 10 hours with your weakest performers. This is a great extension of the 80-20 rule, meaning 20% of our inputs give us 80% of our output of what we want, right? So with our best performers, these are the ones that get things done. They serve clients. They take care of clients. They're incredible lawyers. They're very productive from an economic standpoint as well. Spending time with them should always be our priority. If we could spend the majority of our time with our top few performers versus our bottom performers. And I know that is counterintuitive, but it absolutely works. Within our particular practice, I have what I call a farm team. There are a few relationships within our firm that I really want to nurture the most because the upside is so incredible. And spending time with them and supporting them, removing obstacles for them, encouraging them yields the biggest return for the firm rather than spreading myself thin and working with everyone. And I think every leader who follows a formula like that are going to have the best chance to get the results that they want for their practice. So 10 minutes or a few minutes or an hour with your best performer is worth a lot more than an entire day with your weakest performers on your team. Give them time, those weak performers, to get better, or frankly, to find some other firm they can work in and add more value and be a top performer within another firm. Because a weak performer in our practice has often been a great performer in another practice, and in a few cases, vice versa. Number 9, recruiting teammates is 95% rejecting talent that doesn't fit. And I'm talking about talent that doesn't fit from a cultural perspective, from a competency perspective. So having to kiss a lot of frogs is the nature of the game. Being patient around hiring and not being desperate because you have to have a body in that seat to get the job done works. And so you as a top leader, one of your most important jobs, if not your most important job, is to build your team. And you best build your team by rejecting the vast majority of potential new teammates that can join that team, being very, very choosy on that. And we follow a process in our firm called the Who Method. It's in a book by Jeff Smart called the Who Method, I think is the name of it. You know, that's the best system that I have seen and that we have employed within our practice. And we're really rigorous around following that process. But like any process, it is not perfect. And they don't put this in the book, but there is definitely some luck involved. And the idea is reducing the uncertainty to the smallest number possible when making that decision to give an offer, to select a teammate to join your team. But you as a leader, honing that skill and being so quick to reject before you accept, even on the slightest sense, gut feel, rejecting them is going to pay off in the aggregate, in the macro, over the long term. All right, surprising lesson number 10. The value that you command, that your firm commands, is determined by the magnitude of the problems that you solve. And another way to say this is that I believe that the free market sorts all of this out. Of course, there are anomalies here and there, but over time, the free market sorts out how we are compensated, and everyone is compensated fairly based on the value that they are delivering and the problem, the magnitude, the size of the problems that they're solving. Because the free market is a powerful force. You know, all governments try to manipulate and control the free market and to influence it and to push it in certain directions. And they can certainly have blips, but overall, the free market's going to do what the free market does, the invisible hand, so to speak, and it's going to even things out and it's going to compensate us according to the magnitude of the problems that we solve. So in our case, in family law, we are dealing with clients going through sometimes horrific personal agony and turmoil. And the bigger the problems they have, the more our compensation is reflected by that. So it's like that in every single practice out there. The bigger your problem, the more compensation that you can expect. So we try to obviously set out to solve the most difficult problems in our practice because we want to have the best compensation. Obviously, we want to line up with that. It actually holds up over time. We've seen it work. I've seen it just consistently come back to be a pattern that I've been able to observe over and over again. The bigger the problem, the more the reward. Surprising lesson number 11. Tenacity, ambition, just drive beats talent every single day of the week and twice on Sunday, as my dad liked to say. So if there was a way that in a hiring context, you can screen for tenacity, for ambition, for drive, you would be a billionaire overnight. That is so difficult to identify. And of course, you can find clues, you can pick them up, You can surmise them. Your gut feeling can tell you that, but you truly never know till a new teammate gets in and really starts to work and get after. And sometimes that light turns on after they've been with you for quite a while. Sometimes it's apparent from day one when they start, when there's this tenacity, this get after it mentality that they have. So by and large is what we have relied on to build our firm, is surrounding our team, our leadership, with those that have tenacity and really get after it. And I heard it all from the innovations that we were trying to employ wouldn't work. So when we tried to do fixed fee, we were told by our colleagues in the local areas that we were in that it won't work. Our team was just tenacious, and we kept after it year after year after year until we dialed in and got the formula down. We have been told you've got to offer more services than just divorce and post-judgment. You've got to be able to do all these other things for you to be profitable. You're just throwing away those leads. Well, we've proven that didn't work, and that took tenacity on the part of our leadership team to stay with it, to dial in on those few services and become exceptional at delivering those services. We are told that we can't scale. It's too difficult. No one has been and done it save one firm. It's just too much of a challenge to do that. And we have proven again on that we have been able to do that. And it all has come back to a team that is incredibly tenacious individually and incredibly tenacious together. So as you're looking to hire, finding that ambitious, driven, tenacious teammate beats talent. It beats pedigree. It beats where you went to law school. It beats who you know every single day of the week. So finding that is key to building your practice and scaling your family law firm or whatever firm that you have. Well, thank you for joining me this week. I look forward to hopefully seeing you again around here. I'm doing my best to share with you authentically and straight truth as to what's working and what's not working in our practice, with hopes that you can take that and you can recontextualize that and shorten your success curve. Have a great week.